Have you ever been a part of a more lopsided championship than the Big Ten one against Wisconsin? Just 59-0 seems a little overwhelming, and like for a championship game, like Jesus Christ, have a better performance, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, we needed it to be fucking overwhelming just because, you know, otherwise we weren't going to get in.
Right.
And we kind of knew that. It was, you know, it was a really cool year just because it was the first college football playoff ever. So it was really fun to be a part of it just in that aspect because nobody really knew what was going to happen or this or that, or, you know, it was still so fluid. They were still trying to figure out exactly how to even make this whole college football playoff work. So, you know, we didn't know exactly how it was going to be, but, you know, Urban said, you know, going into the game that, you know, we were going to have to win, you know, and he made that very clear to us that we were going to clearly go and win that game, you know, whether it was we won by, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 points, or we won 59-0. You know, he kind of made it known to us it was going to have to be a real statement win. Like, it wasn't going to be like, you know, because honestly, if we would have won in overtime, or if we would have won by a touchdown or a field goal or something like that, like, I don't think that would have been enough for us to jump TCU to get in. So, No, we had no idea it was going to be 59-0. You know, obviously, we didn't know it was going to be that lopsided, but thank God it was, because, you know, kind of after the game, the crazy part was we still didn't know after the game if we were going to get in, because, you know, this whole thing was new to everybody. Nobody really knew how the whole committee worked and things like that. So we were still kind of on the edge of our seats. You know, I mean, yeah, we were, I mean, dude, it was this funny story. So after the game, you know, we're playing in Indy at the Colts Stadium, Big Ten Championship. And, you know, we win the game. It's a night game or whatever. And, you know, by the time we fly back to Columbus and get back, you know, it's probably 3 a.m., 3 or 4 a.m. And we're so geeked up. We're like, screw that, you know. And I mean, we're probably 25 guys deep in my house, and we pull the all nighter all the way up until noon Eastern the next day, when they made the announcement, you know? And so we get back and it's like 3 or 4 a.m. and we're like, we ain't going to bed. So we stay up and we ordered like $500 worth of, Bob Evans. We catered in Bob Evans at like, you know, 8 a.m. You know, we've been up at this point for like over 24 hours now. I mean, and so we cater in the Bob Evans at like 8 a.m. And, you know, that gets us to like, you know, 10:30, 11. And we still got an hour to go. And guys start dropping like flies. I mean, those guys sleeping on the floor at the house. And, you know, we're like, oh, everybody got to stay up. And man, sure enough, it was so much fun. We stayed up all night long, all the way up until noon the next day. And we literally found out the second that they showed it on television. We didn't know 1 second earlier.
Wow.
We had no idea. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I mean, too, when, you know, we're tired. We've been out for, you know, fucking 36 hours straight. And then they show we're going to play Bama. And we're like, oh, shit. You know, like, we all kind of look around like, oh, man, that shit just got real. Like, you know, because at the time, Bama was the complete powerhouse, you know. I mean, nobody was beating Bama back then, really. And obviously, we knew that. Like, so when we saw the way Mass was up with Bama, we were like, yeah, man, you gotta be fucking kidding me. We gotta play these dudes now. But, you know, shit, it all worked out.
Did you ever ask Coach Meyer if you could do the whole Zeke show the stomach if you guys beat Bama? Was there ever like a prop bet for you to be able to do it, or was he just never allowed you to do it because you were that blocking tight end?
Do what?
The Zeke crop top, like show the gut, the six pack while you're playing thing.
Oh, no. Nobody else was doing that.
Did anyone else ask to do it?
No, it was just kind of one of those things. Like with Coach Meyer and Coach Mick, our strength coach, like, you know, you didn't stray outside of the fucking lines. You stayed in between the lines pretty well. I mean, So Coach Meyer tells this story. One of the reasons that they're so strict on, like, if you ever watch an Ohio State game or something, like, you know, there's not a player out there that has something on that nobody else on the team has. So when they play in the SEC championship, back when Coach Meyer was at Florida, I don't think he's ever publicly said this, so I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter though. But so they show up to the game and they're playing Bama, and it was Florida versus Alabama, the SEC championship game. You know, and Florida gets off the bus, and you know they kind of they all got their own shit on. You know what I'm saying? They're all kind of wearing their own stuff, like swaggy, this and that. And Coach Meyer said that, you know, he watched Alabama get off the buses, and they were all wearing the exact same suit, tie, coat, everything. And they got their fucking asses handed to them in that game. And, you know, the way Coach Meyer's mind works, like, he's kind of fucking crazy with shit like that. So, like, he made it a point, like, from then on, they weren't going to have any of that individuality bullshit. You know, and that was, I mean, when we were at Ohio State, we had, you know, who's the guy that comes and fits all your suits? What do you call him?
Like a Taylor?
Yeah, Taylor. You know, they brought in a tailor to fit all of us because, you know, obviously not everybody had the same exact, you know, coat in college. So they brought in a tailor to fit everybody. They got everybody the exact same coat. You had to wear the exact same tie as everybody. Like, it was a big deal because some weeks, like, you know, a guy would, like, forget his actual tie and he'd have, like, a one that was similar. And he'd be like, oh, no. Like, he'll notice shit like that. Like, that's how he is. And the way his mind works, too, is, like, if one of his guys doesn't have on the exact tie that he's supposed to have on, like, in his mind, it's like, oh, shit, panic alert. Like, the guy's not ready to play. The guy's not focused. Like, that, you know, that's how in-depth and that's how he coaches, you know. And that's why I was saying earlier about, you know, am I surprised he stepped back? And no, I'm not, because to be like that, it just takes so much out of you. But that's also why he's been so successful, you know.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing about playing Big Ten football?
Big Ten football?
Yeah.
Not playing Purdue at West Lafayette, that's for sure. I mean, you know, not going to Indiana and playing IU at a noon kickoff with, like, you know, 1,500 fans in the stands.
So what about playing at a place like Kinnick?
Playing at a place like where?
Kinnick at Iowa.
It's funny. It's the only place I didn't play.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just – you know, I never – it was – you know, because they kind of switched up the divisions.
Oh, right.
So I never – I played Iowa once at home, but I never played there. So – but I hear that's a phenomenal place to play. I mean, it's actually unfortunate I never did get to play there. I always wanted to play with, like, the fans right behind you and stuff like that. But, yeah, I never got to play there. I was just going to, you know, my favorite part about playing the Big Ten football was, God, I don't even know, honestly. I mean, just, I don't know. I love the Midwest, you know. I mean, the Midwest has got just good fucking homegrown, you know.
Yeah.
God damn, why is this guy calling me? Hang on one second. Yeah, the Midwest got some great people. That was probably my favorite thing about playing in the Big Ten was all, you know, all the people you come across in the Midwest, and, you know, there's all good homegrown people, and, you know, I love the Midwest, even Iowa, you know, I mean, there's nothing there, you know, but it's got good people. It's got good people.
When you line up for a play, you know, whether you're blocking or getting ready to run a route, what kind of goes through your mind?
Oh, man, so much. I mean, the first things first is, you know, obviously you get the play, you know, you get the play called, you know, college, you get it from the sideline, they'll signal it, you know, with all the signals, or, you know, in the NFL, they, you know, you'll get it in the huddle, from the quarterback. But, you know, the first things first is you obviously got to know what you're doing with the play. And, you know, I mean, most plays, there's numerous different things that you can do. You know, just depending on defensive schemes, how the defense lines up, which personnel they're in, which techniques they're playing, all kinds of things like that. You know, but the first thing is just knowing. I would say on most plays, you probably have there's probably two or three different options of how you run the play based on the defense. So, you know, the first thing is you better know all of them. Sometimes there's even more, you know. But you kind of go through your head on, okay, if they give me this, and this is all this all happens in a matter of like, you know, probably 10 seconds, you know. I mean, you probably have five to 10 seconds. You know, you kind of go through, okay, if they give me this, I do this. If they do this, I do this, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, next thing is who are you playing? You know, what defense are you playing? Which guy are you trying to block? Which guy are you trying to run a route off of? You know, so then your mindset kind of goes to, you know, how are you successful going against the other guy? You know, if it's blocking, I mean, you know, if you're blocking a guy like, you know, Khalil Mack or Von Miller or, you know, JJ Watt, you know, you better have something up your fucking sleeve. I mean, you better bring it. You better, you know, you make one wrong step with guys like that, you won't even touch them, you know. And then, you know, as if you're running a route, which player are you running? You know, where's his leverage? Is he inside of you? Is he outside of you? You know, where are you trying to get? What's your rules on the route? You know, if like one of the great things about Coach Meyer that he teaches so well is like leverage. God, he used to have these. He used to go crazy on leverage. Like if you fucked up a lever, like you know if you're trying to go inside, and you got a guy that's outside of you, like you don't start and just immediately go inside. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're running around and you've got a safety or a linebacker that's playing outside leverage on you and you're trying to run a 10-yard in, you know, you don't – if he's outside of you, you don't just like run straight up or run in and then try to get away from him. Like, no, you attack his leverage. So, if he has outside leverage on you and you're trying to go in, then you attack him outside you because then it widens him even more. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you just run straight or you run in, then he's just going to close on you. You know what I'm saying? And then you're going to break and he's right there and he's just going to cover you. But you know, yeah. So leverage, I would say leverage is one of the biggest, same thing with blocking. I mean, you know, if the ball's going outside and you got a guy that's playing a wide nine technique, you know, you're a little bit of a disadvantage just based on leverage. So you better, you know, figure out a way to, you know, manipulate him or, you know, some way, shape or form to try and gain an advantage because you know the advantage that the offense has is they know the play and the disadvantage the defense has is they don't know the play and sometimes you know they're lined up in an easy position to block them. You know what I'm saying? If the ball is trying to go out wide and the guy's lined up head up on you, you know, that's one of those situations where, you know, as a tight end, you should be successful on that majority of the time. You know where the ball's going. The guy's at a disadvantage already because he's lined up inside of you and things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot that goes through your head when you get the play call. And, you know, I mean, the worst fucking thing, you know, it happens to everybody. So it's not like, you know, I don't feel ashamed to admit it, but there's, you know, there's some, you know, every now and then, once a year or something, you know, like you'll get a play call and you'll be like, oh fuck, like what, you know, and you'll be like, oh, I don't know. You know, that's the worst is when you don't know what to do. And that's honestly what I think drives most guys to like study and really understand that, because man, if you don't know what to do, I mean, you better make it look like you know what you're doing, because I mean it can get real ugly real fucking fast if you got a guy that, you know, doesn't know what he's doing and steps the wrong way. I mean, because I mean, God, if you're running a zone right fucking run play and you don't really know what to do and you step the wrong way, I mean, the tackle's gonna step on you, the guard's gonna step on the fucking tackle, and it's gonna look real real shitty. And when you turn on that film, that's one of the worst feelings ever. his fucking turn it on the film where you're the one that didn't know the play. And you're the one that fucked it up.
That's when you get the little red, you get the laser pointer put on the film and you're like, what the fuck are you doing right here? And you're like, I don't even have any idea, coach. Yeah. I was just making a mistake at 100 miles per hour.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. And I mean, that sounds corny, but low key, like, that's what you got to do. Like, if you really don't know the play,
what I was taught, at least. That's what I was taught. If you make a mistake, make 100 like mile per hour mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, first you ask, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you have a good quarterback and it's a passing play and you're not quite sure what to do, just ask a fucking quarterback, you know, like the quarterback, it's their job to know everybody's route and what everybody's doing. I mean, you know, when you watch Gronk play, like, you know, I'm not sure he knows half the routes he's supposed to be running, but you know, like, quite honestly, it really doesn't matter. If you got a guy like Tom Brady there, like, it's not going to, when you have younger quarterbacks, it's not as easy for them to, like, if a guy asks him, what's the play, you know what I'm saying? Then they're going to have to think in their head, like, oh, what's that guy? What position is he playing? You know, and then they got to go through a kind of a process and they're young and, you know, then it kind of gets them, you know, thrown out of whack and stuff. They get a little, you know, uneasy. So, you know, when you have younger quarterbacks, it's, you know, it's not the greatest thing in the world to be asking them all the time, but like with a guy like Tom Brady and Gronk and shit, like, I mean, you know, so what? It's not gonna baffle Tom Brady or, you know, throw him off his game if you ask him, you know, oh shit, I forgot this. What do I got here? You know, I mean, he'll answer you at the snap of his fingers, and you know, and then it's not. I mean, for him, it's not gonna confuse him at all. You know, it's not. I mean, he's so smart and so ahead of the game. You know, it helps having a guy. And if it's a run play and you don't know, like, hopefully you got a good tackle, you know, that knows his shit, because, you know, the first thing you do is, if you don't know, you ask somebody and try to figure it out. I mean, those are some of the most stressed, any football player will tell you, man, those are some of the most stressful 30 seconds of your life, 20 seconds of your life, when you get a play call and you're not 100% sure what to do. And you start scrambling, like, you know, asking, looking around, like, you know, then you go down that black hole of like, wait, was it fucking this? I think we ran it on Wednesday one time. Was it this play? Was it, you know, and like, it's just you just got to try not to fuck up the whole thing where it looks.
So I wanted to ask you about your draft day experience of what was it like getting drafted by the Broncos and getting a call from John Elway and a text from Peyton Manning?
Man, it was a stressful few days. I'll tell you that much. You know, it's good stress, obviously. But, you know, it is stressful. Like, just, you know, they build up the draft now the way it is it's, I mean, for rookies and things like that, for guys getting drafted, it's a long, God, it's like the longest 4 or 5 months of your life. I mean, from the time you finish your senior year, your junior year, or whatever, and then, you know, you go into this combine training, and, you know, when you're, honestly, does the combine really mean shit? Like, no, not really. I mean, it, like, a little bit, you know what I'm saying? For certain things, it might mean a little bit more, but for the most part, man, like, I mean, if you don't have any good film out there and then you put on some fucking underwear and go run, you know, catch a nice one-handed catch in the combine, it's not like all of a sudden you're going to move up on the draft boards and, you know, some teams are going to be like, oh, well, did you see that catch he had at the combine? Like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's draft this guy. Like, no, that's not how it works. I mean, you know, but in your head, when you're coming out, it's like, you know, it's the next biggest thing. It's like, you know, it's a very stressful event. You've worked so hard your entire life, you know, obviously, to get to this point. So, you know, you finish school and, you know, then you get to the combine. And that's stressful, you know, and then you finish that, then you have your pro day, you know, you're training for that, and that's stressful. And then you get a couple weeks off before the draft, but the whole time it's like, it's kind of an eerie, weird feeling knowing that at one point you're going to get a phone call and they're going to tell you where you're going to live for the next 4 years of their life and you have no control over it.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of like the easy part about it. And like I said, you know, it's obviously good stress. It's not like bad stress, but, you know, it's stressful. So, like, leading up to the draft, you know, the last few days before, you're like just sitting around waiting, hoping to come. And then, you know, I obviously knew I wasn't going to be a first rounder. So, you know, I just out of the, I remember the night of the first round draft, you know, like I just went out on the boat and went fishing and hung out with some of my buddies. And so then you got, you know, you sit around the whole next day and you know, like, all right, you know, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, I'm going to get drafted today. But like, there's no guarantees, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could have to go to sleep that night and then wake up the next day and, you know, mentally go through the whole thing again. Like, God, I fucking hope I get drafted today. So yeah, then the day, the first round goes by, and then the next day I get up and I remember I spent the whole day at the beach. I was like, fuck this. Like, I just hung out at the beach with my buddies, some chicks, just get my mind off of it. Shit. And then, you know, so man, so I was pretty calm and collected, you know. So then the draft starts and, you know, I didn't want like a huge deal, but you know, we had a decent amount of people over the house. And man, yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, because I was third round, I was third round. So they do round one and then they do two and three on the second day, you know, and I was towards the end of that fucking second day now. It wasn't like, you know, I was one of the first ones off the board. So I'm sitting there, man, and you know, you're sitting there and you're just kind of waiting, you know, everybody's just kind of mingling around and you're sitting there in front of the TV and you obviously just got your phone in front of you waiting for it to ring. And so, man, I was sitting there and, you know, I was towards like the end, the middle of the end of the third round. So, I mean, I had been sitting there for a few hours now. And, you know, after like the first hour or so, I was kind of like, screw this. You know, I started throwing back some fireball and, you know, just trying to take the edge off a little bit. Like, shit, man, you know, I might have to wake up tomorrow morning and go through this all over again. You know, so I have a couple drinks and, you know, I'm sitting there. And so then they drafted, I thought I might go to Cincinnati. It was one of the teams I thought might draft me. And so they drafted another tight end that I trained with. And I was like, oh, hell no. Like, you know, at this point I'm like, all right, more fireball. Let's go. It was like two or three picks after that, because you're sitting there and you're watching like the teams that are coming up and you kind of have an idea of like, you know, this team might draft me, this team probably not, you know, things like that. Okay, I met with them, I had a good interview with them, like things like that. So, you know, I'm like, Cincinnati picks, I kind of start looking at the next picks and I'm like, fuck, man, I'm gonna go into day three here. And so sure enough, you know, a few picks after that is when my phone finally rang and I didn't know, I didn't look at the area code or anything. I just answered it right away. I was like, hello. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. They all like, who is it? And the voice on the other end of the line is like, Jeff, it's John Elway. And I'm like, yep. John, how you doing? You know, like, yeah, I'm good. How you doing? You know? And so, yeah, then he, you know, he called and, you know, I'm out there on the phone and everybody's up there freaking out, wondering who it is. And so they said, you know, we're going to draft you at the next pick here. And so it was pretty cool, man. It was you know, going to a place like Denver is phenomenal. I was so fortunate to be it's such a great organization and a place like, you know, obviously being in Denver, there's a lot worse places you can be. And that's one of the big things about the draft is when you're looking at, you know, places to go, there, you know, there's not necessarily a place you're like dying to go, but there's like, you know, a handful, you know, two or three places where you're like, that's not where I want to go.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, another funny story was, so, you know, we had the overflow of the driveway. There was no room left in the driveway for anybody to park. And so I'm outside on the phone and this is after they draft me, you know, and I'm trying to figure out like the flights because you got to fly in the next day. And see, you know, there's on the phone with the people, they're, you know, telling me my flights and this and that. And, you know, I'm outside and fucking two cops roll up and, you know, they start getting on my, and I'm out there on the phone and like, you know, there's cars parked like kind of on the street, in the grass, like, you know, kind of fucking cars everywhere. And I'm like, you know, I'm on the phone trying to figure out this, you know, flights and everything. And these cops are like trying to talk to me and I'm like really not answering them, you know, and you could tell they're kind of getting annoyed. Like they thought I was just some like, you know, Naples kid, like, didn't give a fuck about the cops. And, you know, finally I was like, you know, sir, look, I just got drafted by the Denver Broncos. And, like, you know, these are all the people inside. Like, I really can't get off the phone right now and just go in there and have everybody move their cars, blah, blah, blah. And the guy was super cool. He was like, oh, shit. Yeah, don't worry. You know, like, yeah, don't worry about the cars. You know, like, they were super cool after that. So it all worked out all right. But it was funny how they were jumping my ass. And I'm like, just give me a second. But they were cool once they figured out what was going on.
So your rookie year, right at the beginning of it, you tore your ACL in rookie camps. Was that like a non-contact ACL tear? Or did someone fall into you when that happened? Like, how did that all go about?
Yeah, so it was non-contact. It was non-contact. This is another funny story, man. I've told a lot of stories I haven't told in a long time. So I get drafted, and, you know, you get a week, you fly out there. Oh, another funny story. So I get drafted. I'm going to Denver from Naples, Florida. You know, so I'm like all geeked up, and I'm on the phone with the lady, and she goes, "Yeah, your flight takes off at 5 a.m. the next morning," and it's like, I mean, you know, it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock, and she was like, "Your flight takes off at 5 a.m." I'm like, "Takes off at 5 a.m.? Like that's like you have to be at the airport at like 3:30," and you know, so obviously, like, you know, I go out, and that was one of the cool things about John. Was like, when I was on the phone with him, he was like, "Yeah, your flight's gonna be early as shit tomorrow morning, so don't worry. Like, we know you're gonna be hungover. We know you're gonna be fucking miserably tired. So like, don't try to. Like, you don't have to try to act like you're not, in a way. You know, like, he was cool about that. But yeah, so we go out all night, and then like I have to leave. I mean, I literally come right from the bar to right back home, shower, put a suit on, and. You know, we get back at like 2 a.m., 2:30, and I leave for the airport at 3 a.m. You know, that was a long fucking day. But anyway, so then I get drafted. Yeah, so then we go to show up to rookie minicamp. And, bro, it's me, and there's one other tight end there that they brought in for rookie minicamp. And that's it. And rookie minicamp, they changed it now partially because of what happened with me. But it used to be a shit show. I mean, it used to be like, you had like, you know, six, seven, eight drafted guys. And then you'd have like, you know, 20 or 30 guys that were all undrafted. They're trying to make a team, you know, and they're trying to make a good impression. So they're going balls to the fucking wall out there. And it was stressful as shit. I'm telling you what, I mean, cause it's the drafted guy too. It's your first time, you know, performing in the NFL at all. You know, it's your first time, the coaches are getting to see you and everything. And like, then you're going against these guys that are going a million miles an hour that like their whole life depends on if they make the team from this rookie minicamp or not. And so like the first day, I mean, we run so many plays and it's like, so we get out there for the first practice of the first day, and the other tight end that they had brought in was a basketball player. And he had never played college football. He played high school football, and then he was like a friend of somebody, and they basically just needed another body. Well, you know, we get, you know, the most basic formation in all of football is like I right. Like, I mean, and this dude fucks it up, and he goes and lines up. He's trying to tackle, kind of next to him, and he's in like this 2-point stance with like his hands on his elbows on his knees. And he has no clue. And so then, like, so it was, I had to take all the reps because this guy didn't even know, he didn't even know how to line up. And so then that night I get a knock on my door, and, you know, I go answer it, and it's him. Oh. And he's got his playbooks in his hand. And he goes, hey, man. Can you give these back to the coaches tomorrow? Like, you know, this shit ain't for me. I'm out of here. And I'm like, what? I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. So, you know, so he quit, and like, I mean, he quit. So then the next day, I had to take all the reps again, And man, I was just running, and eventually, you know, I was just running, and my knee just gave out on me. I was so fatigued from, because it was 2-a-days too. You practice in the morning, and practice in the afternoon, and so it was the afternoon, the second practice, the second day, and I was just so fatigued. And I mean, I was in the training room before we went out, and I'm rubbing like fucking icy hot all over my legs. And I'm telling the trainers, I'm like, I can barely even lift up my fucking knees, you know, to run. And it was just a bad, you know, whole circumstance, how it unfolded. And it was tough. I mean, it's, you know, obviously not ideal and not how you want to start your NFL career out.
Yeah. What was it like being on the sidelines during the Super Bowl season your rookie year?
And what was media day like for the Super Bowl? What was that like?
You know, okay, man, I mean, I got stories I can tell you. I can go story after story here, but media day was cool. Just the whole Super Bowl experience is, I'm just so fortunate that I was able to experience it, because it's, unless you've actually been through it, like as a player on the team in the Super Bowl, it's just so cool. I mean, all the way from the time that you win, you know, to the time you're going to the Super Bowl till the actual game starts. It's insane. I mean, you know, just showing up to your locker after practice. I wasn't even playing, you know, and it's $5,000 watches and boom boxes and shit in everybody's locker. You know what I'm saying? Because they're just sending stuff. And I wasn't even playing. You know, I was a rookie on IR. Like, I couldn't have really been lower on the totem pole, really, as far as the team goes. But it was, you know, it was so cool. You know, funny story about the actual Super Bowl was, obviously I was on IR, so I wasn't playing. And then Trevor Siemian, you know, at the time, he was their 7th round draft pick. So he wasn't dressed, he was inactive. And so, you know, we're sitting there, and it's halftime of the Super Bowl. And, you know, so we're, the team runs in, and Trevor and I are kind of mingling there for a second, seeing like, you know, what's, you know, because we heard Beyonce was performing. We're like, you know, well, you know, where's Beyonce? Where's she going to be at? Blah, blah, blah. And so we're kind of mingling there, waiting to see like, you know, where's she going to be? Sure enough, they set up the stage smack dab in front of our bench. And Trevor and I kind of look at each other, and we're like, yeah, we're staying out here. And we sat we sat right there on the fucking team bench in the middle of this, in the middle of halftime, and watched Beyonce, front row seats to Beyonce. I'm talking front row. And I mean, we're looking up at her the whole time because she's performing for everybody in the stands. And we're literally right in front of the stage where she's performing. And we snuck out and we stayed out there the whole time and just watched the Beyonce halftime show. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. What's your favorite Peyton Manning memory or experience with him?
My favorite Peyton memory was when he got injured. He got injured during that year, and I was on IR, and he was very cautious when he was injured about people seeing him be injured, because he was getting towards the end of his career. And you know what I'm saying? Like, the NFL, it gets a little really politicky and things like that sometimes. So he was very, you know, strict on, like, when he was injured, he wasn't going to just go out in the middle of the field, you know, where all the offices can see, you know, what he's doing and things like that. So, you know, he sends me a text the night before. He says, hey, we're going into the indoor facility at 9:30 a.m. And he said, don't tell anybody else. So we get out there, and he's like working on getting back from an injury. And so he's, you know, we're kind of going through the plays. And I know most of the plays because I was in the meetings and things. And so he tells me to run this one route. And I go out there and, you know, I run the route. He throws it. I catch it. And, you know, I think like, all right, you know, I that was a pretty good job. I, you know, ran a good route. He threw a good ball. I caught it. And so, you know, I'm jogging back to the huddle, and he like waves me over, and he's like, and I'm like, oh shit, you know, I'm like, what did I do wrong? You know, like, he didn't look real happy about it. He's like, you know, got the fast wave, like, come here, come here, come here, come here. I'm like, fuck, you know, I thought I ran a good route there, caught the ball. And he goes, you know, you ran that at 12. I want you at 11 and a half. And I'm like, what? And I was like, I kind of thought he was joking at first. I was like, well, the playbook says 12. It's a 12-yard out. And he goes, and I didn't, well, I obviously didn't say that. I was like, yes, sir, 11 and a half, got it. You know, my bad. But that's how, you know, on top of it he is. And that's how stingy he is with, that's what made him so great, is because, you know, he didn't want, if his, it was all about timing and where he was putting that ball. And he wanted you to break at 11 and a half fucking yards, not 12 yards. And that's one of my, you know, that's like, that right there just sums up, you know, his playing career as best as I can sum it up, is, you know, that's how detailed that guy is 11 and a half yards, not 12 yards. And to him, it was all the difference in the world. To me, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, bro? It's like, it's we're talking about 6 inches here. You know, I mean, what? And to him, it might as well have been 4 feet. But yeah, that's one of my favorite Peyton stories.
With your time with the Broncos, you had 3 different head coaches with Kubiak, Vance Joseph, and Vic Fangio. How did they impact you as a player, and what did you learn from playing under each of them? What were things you learned?
Let me, so I just pulled up. I got to go to this meeting in 5 minutes. Let's wrap this call up, but I'm free. Good. I can do another. I can,
okay.
Shit, I can talk all day, you guys. I mean, I got some stories I could tell. I don't do a lot of podcasts, you know. I mean, I do a couple with, you know, if I got, you know, history, you might know my mom and Naples and things
like
that.
We'll just make you a recurring guest then. We'll just bring you back on. Like, what stops?
Yeah. I'm actually, you know, technically I'm unemployed right now. So, you know, if you want to put me on salary, that's cool too. I mean,
I don't know what salary could be. It could be like 50 cents. We really don't have much income at the moment. So,
I mean, what do you guys, when you turn your books in at the end of the semester, don't you get money back or something?
Yeah.
I rent my books.
Oh, I buy mine. I'll give you 25% of the money I make back. It'll probably be about $5, but.
I mean, shit, you know, I mean, it's better than nothing right now. My wife's up my ass every day. The fact I'm unemployed. I mean, all she says, all I do is golf, which I don't know. She's kind of right.
Yeah, no, all but right. if you want to come on for a part two later this week or next week or something, we'd love to do
Yeah. it. Yeah. Yeah. Let's set up a part two and we'll keep going. Yeah. All right. That. What did I learn from 3 fucking head coaches? God.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to think about that one for a minute.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. I will talk to you guys. You guys be safe.
Thanks. Right, have a good one. Peace.
Sounds good.
We'll do part 2.
Sounds good. I'll text you later.
All right, guys.
See ya.
Bye.